Did Don Draper really buy the world a Coke? Did Tony Soprano really die, or just order more onion rings? The finales of our favorite shows can make us argue, make us cry, and make us crazy. From Spotify and The Ringer, I'm Andy Greenwald, and this is Stick the Landing, a new podcast where we'll be telling the story of modern TV backwards, one fade out at a time. Find Stick the Landing on Wednesdays on the Prestige TV feed, on Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode of The Town is brought to you by FX's The Bear, starring Jeremy Allen White, Ayo Edebiri, and Eben Moss Backrack. Season 2 follows as the crew work to transform their grimy sandwich joint into a next-level spot. It turns out the only thing harder than running a restaurant is opening a new one. Television Academy members can watch all episodes at fxnetworks.com/FYC.
This episode is brought to you by Vuori. I love sports. I know you do too. I also know that lots of you exercise, but if you're like me and my wife, the beloved sports gal, you're sick and tired of ugly, uncomfortable workout gear. Especially, you know, I do a lot of walking. I walk around LA. I make calls. I listen to podcasts. Here are two words that will change everything. Vuori clothing, a line of activewear that is unbelievable. The best thing about Vuori is you can lounge around in it. You can work out in it. You can go outside. You can go shopping down in your local wherever. And you never feel like you're either underdressed or overdressed. You're just comfortable. You can wear it when you're training, traveling, lounging around the house. Go get yourself some of the most comfortable and versatile clothing on the planet. Here's the deal. Our listeners get 20% off their first purchase at Vuori.com/Simmons. Once again, Vuori.com/Simmons.
It is Thursday, April 11th. I'm here in Las Vegas at the annual CinemaCon convention where the theater company executives from around the world come to see the latest innovations in cup holders and Skittles dispensers. Truly impressive stuff. And they also see previews of what movies the studios have in store for them this summer and the rest of the year. The Warner Brothers presentation was Tuesday. They did a nice job. We got new looks at Furiosa and Joker 2 and my favorite, Horizon, an American Saga, parts 1 and 2, complete with Kevin Costner getting a fake award on stage and then telling everybody that he will always remember that they stood and gave him a standing ovation. What a guy. It was very weird. Universal and Lionsgate went yesterday. Ariana Grande almost got me to care about Wicked. I still think that movie's going to be huge, though. CinemaCon is obviously coming at a pretty perilous time for the theater business. The Hollywood strikes of the past year have trimmed the number of movie releases, pushed a bunch of titles to next year. Box office is almost certainly going to be down this year, probably a little more than $8 billion, way less than the nearly $12 billion that they had pre-pandemic. Next year could be better, but a lot of people, myself included, I wrote about this in my Puck newsletter, they believe the box office will never get back to pre-COVID levels. That this country in particular, because of the stark reality, has way too many movie screens. It was 38,000 last time the National Association for Theater Owners checked that number. And that's down only about 12% from 2019. So a big correction in box office, but not a big correction in the theaters. So something probably needs to be done. But there's a bright spot in all of that. The premium large format screens, PLFs, that are increasingly popular and dominating the box office for big budget titles like Dune 2, Godzilla vs. Kong, and the upcoming summer titles. And the king of the PLFs, he doesn't even like to use the term PLF, he thinks it's diminishing to IMAX, is Rich Gelfond, the CEO of IMAX. He's been on the show before. He's kind of become the most important person for the spring and summer movies because he's got only about 1,700 theaters in the U.S. So he's got to pick and choose which movies get the IMAX treatment. And as we saw last summer with Oppenheimer securing most of those IMAX screens and pushing out Mission Impossible, this stuff really matters to the bottom line. It can be 20, 30, 40% of a weekend box office. So today we're going to get into the theaters question, what to do about the glut of multiplexes, how IMAX became the kingmaker of summer movies, and which titles have been anointed this year. From The Ringer and Puck, I'm Matt Bellany, and this is The Town. All right, we are here with Rich Gelfond, who is the CEO of IMAX and a returning champion on this show. Welcome back.
Thanks, Matt. Great to be here.
We are in a very glamorous hotel suite at the Caesars Palace Resort in Las Vegas, where we have been for the CinemaCon convention. You guys threw a very nice reception last evening. We'll get to the IMAX kind of kingmaker status that you guys have achieved over the last few years. But I want to talk a little bit about something that has interested me heading into this convention, which is the proliferation and, in my opinion, overscreening of the U.S. in particular. There's too many movie screens. I wrote about this in my Puck newsletter. I'm going to, you know, talk about this on a panel with some exhibition executives here. I get a lot of shit online for saying there's too many movie theaters because people who like going to movies say, no. I like my movie theater. But the business overall, if we are heading into a $8 billion, $9 billion, $10 billion a year business, not $12 billion a year, there's going to have to be some retrenchment in the theaters. Are you in agreement with that?
Complete and total agreement.
Well, just not IMAX screens.
No, well, IMAX isn't an exhibitor, as you know, and we have exclusive zones, so we have limited screens. As a matter of fact, we could double our footprint in North America, and it probably still wouldn't be enough. Yeah. But conventional screens, yes. And one of my own disappointments is that the exhibition industry didn't use the pandemic and the ability of bankruptcy and things like that to lessen their number of screens. If I were in that business, that's what I would have done.
And there's a number of reasons why they didn't. You know, a lot of times when a theater anchors a mall, the owner of the mall will do anything they can to keep that multiplex there. There's a number of other reasons. AMC in particular really doubled down on scale and got so big that they can't really function in a box office environment that dips below $9, $10, $11 billion a year. So they're in a tough spot. I mean, it really is. It feels like you guys are sitting on this island around what is often a crumbling infrastructure. Do you feel that way?
Not really, because we're in the top performing screens on a global basis, and only one third of our screens are in North America. So there are other markets like Southeast Asia and Japan and parts of Europe that are really thriving. So when you look at IMAX, you've got to look at it global. In North America, I mean, again, Regal and Cineworld went into bankruptcy, yeah, and we didn't lose IMAX screens. Like, right, they paid us their every penny. They reaffirmed all the screens, IMAXs they had. As a matter of fact, I think they closed one or two multiplexes, but other exhibitors bought them and put IMAXs in them.
Right.
You know, again, crumbling, I wouldn't use as the right word, Matt. I think that severe pruning would be the word I would use.
Okay, that's fair. And the IMAX component of it is interesting because, as you said, there could be way more IMAX screens in this country, but that requires investment. And most people don't know this. You guys don't actually build the theaters. You are the technology company behind a lot of these theaters. Don't you worry, though, that these companies that do build the screens are so financially challenged and laden with debt that they're not going to be able to invest in the building that you guys might want?
No, I'm not worried about that because, again, our theaters are in all the top performing multiplexes. Mm-hmm. And if Cineworld didn't want the screen, Cinemark, yeah, wanted the screen.
So why aren't there five screens?
Because IMAX is like the church that was built for Easter Sunday. Okay. So there's a lot of capacity.
Yeah.
So on weekends and when big movies open, they're filled. But, you know, on Wednesday afternoon, it's not like Easter Sunday.
True. I just feel like we're moving towards a scenario where the PLFs are the movies to a lot of people. IMAX is going to the movies. There's Wait for Home. And there's go to see it in IMAX. And maybe at some point, it will be a scenario where there are multiple IMAXs in these locations and some of these other theaters fall away.
So, Matt, you use the word PLFs and IMAX interchangeably.
All right, you don't do that.
Oh, not only don't I do it, it's a total misrepresentation. So IMAX is a technology company. You know, we spend $100 million in SG&A. You know, we work with the filmmakers years in advance. These PLFs are the same projector that's in one auditorium that they move to a really big screen. What IMAX does is a software, hardware solution where you keep the quality and improve it, and it makes it look better. you know, we have nothing in common with the PLFs, except they all have an X in their name. And I'm sure that's just a coincidence, Matt.
Well, and they charge more.
And they charge more, right. And so people come up to me all the time. I say, oh, I saw this movie in IMAX. I said, funny, we didn't play that. And as a matter of fact, a lot of the exhibitors, when people come in, they say, oh, I want to buy an IMAX ticket. And they'll say, oh, go see it in fake X or whatever they call it. And they keep more of the money when they do it. So they have an incentive to release it in fake X. Yeah. But make no mistake about it, the consumers aren't fooled. I mean, you look at Oppenheimer and you look at Dune and, you know, and you look at even Godzilla, they know what the real thing is and they know what the fake thing is.
Well, and the filmmakers definitely know. Well, let's get into that because Civil War is opening this weekend in IMAX. Give me some stats on the percentage box office that is coming from IMAX for some of these big movies this year, like Dune and Godzilla.
So Dune, we did 22% of the world on 0.8% of the screens.
That is a great stat. Say that again. So less than 1% of the screens, but you did about 20% of the box office worldwide.
22%, not that I'm picky or anything. Right, okay. But, you know, step back from that. One of every 4.5 tickets in the world was sold to someone who has less than 1% of the screen. So if that's not telling you what the public wants, and, you know,
they want more IMAX screens.
They do. And I want them to build them, but not in the same multiplex. I want them in places where they're not. Another statistic is last year, as you know, was not a stellar year for exhibitors, and their box office from 2019 was down around 20%. Our box office was essentially flat. And if you adjusted on the same currency, we would have been up from 2019. So we're in a really different business. Like, people really want to go to IMAX.
And that has set up a very interesting dynamic that I hear from the studio side often, where you are the kingmaker. What you decide to play and how long you play these movies can have a very significant impact on how these movies ultimately do. So we saw it last year with Oppenheimer getting the screens, Mission Impossible not getting the screens. We're seeing it this summer where it's playing out, and you have had to make what I imagine are tough decisions as to which movies to play when all the studios want the dates. Walk us through the summer and how you are deploying these IMAX screens for some of the big movies.
So some of the movies really have a lot of IMAX DNA in them. So, for example, Deadpool Wolverine was shot by Marvel with IMAX digital cameras. Joker was filmed for IMAX. And in fact, Todd Phillips is releasing a number of the screens with IMAX film, just like we did in Dune. And there's a lot of IMAX DNA in there.
Disney, and you favor those movies in the theaters?
Sure, because when it's filmed with our cameras or our aspect ratio, it makes the experience better for the public. And, you know, that's what we're all about.
That was the Nolan advantage last summer, where people were like, what? It's a biopic, 3 hours. What are you doing in IMAX? But he had a 20-year relationship with you. He shot the movie in IMAX and he got the screens, and it ultimately made a big difference.
But again, let's remember, it's not having screens for the sake of screens. It looks better. It sounds better. It's just a far superior experience. And Chris has worked with IMAX so much, he's really mastered the art. And, you know, I think a lot of the reason that Oppenheimer worked and was so successful was because Chris knew how to use the tools better than anyone else.
So that's Wolverine and Deadpool. That's Joker. What about earlier in the summer?
I'm going to let you go and, you know, go further into this. But remember, 20% of our box office is also foreign language films internationally. So this week, we have 5 foreign language films coming out. One of the most interesting ones is a Korean film with one of the band members from BTS who's going into the army. So this is the last chance you'll get to see him.
And the K-pop fans really need to see their idols that big up close.
Well, I was going to say the one you're not going to want to miss, Matt, is an Indonesian film. I've heard you're a student of Indonesia.
Everyone knows that.
But in Indonesia, they like it. And in other places in that area.
Well, isn't that mostly China? I mean, you have so many screens in China.
Yeah, I mean, we do have a lot of screens in China. And last year, we had almost a normal year. We did about $300 million. But again, it's not just about the big. And when you talk about music, the sound system is a big part of it, too. So we just repurposed a 40-year-old Queen film. It's called Queen Rocks Montreal. And Freddie Mercury looks so vibrant. And I'm a Queen fan, and disclosure, it was fantastic. But we did over $5 million in a weekend because when you see it in IMAX, it's like a way you haven't seen it before.
This episode is brought to you by Vuori. I love sports. I know you do too. I also know that lots of you exercise, but if you're like me and my wife, the beloved sports gal, you're sick and tired of ugly, uncomfortable workout gear. Especially, you know, I do a lot of walking. I walk around LA. I make calls. I listen to podcasts. Here are two words that will change everything. Vuori clothing, a line of activewear that is unbelievable. The best thing about Vuori is you can lounge around in it. You can work out in it. You can go outside. You can go shopping down your local wherever. And you never feel like you're either underdressed or overdressed. You're just comfortable. You can wear it when you're training, traveling, lounging around the house. Go get yourself some of the most comfortable and versatile clothing on the planet. Here's the deal. Our listeners get 20% off their first purchase at Vuori.com/Simmons. Once again, Vuori.com/Simmons.
On May 10th, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes is coming to IMAX and theaters everywhere.
What a wonderful day!
This summer, one movie event will reign.
It is our time.
They stole my village.
I know where they're taking your clan.
Bend for your king.
Never.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Only in theaters May 10th. Tickets on sale now. Rated PG-13. Some material may be inappropriate for children under 13.
I sometimes think of you as like the proprietor or the bouncer in a VIP club or the VIP section within a club. And other than the movies that were shot in IMAX, what does the behind the scenes conversations with the studios look like when you are deciding how to apportion those screens? Other, you know, take the IMAX technology, making the film out of it. What do they do? Are you getting, you know, sweeteners? Are you getting, you know, take this movie and then we'll give you this longer, those kinds of horse trading?
Well, obviously there's always complicated nuance, but our take rate for the studio has been pretty consistent.
Explain what the take rate is.
Our revenue stream works. We get paid by the exhibitors a certain percentage of the box, and we get paid by the studios a certain percentage of the box. And it's relatively standard. So that's not the basis by which we choose a film. But I'd say the biggest criteria, is it a film that's really going to look good in IMAX and it's going to be consistent with our brand? And by this time, the studios know that and the filmmakers know it. And then when we discern which ones, like everything in Hollywood, Matt, it has a lot to do with relationships. So when we have a long relationship with a filmmaker and, you know, they really understand the art of IMAX, that's a big thing. If it's a studio that knows how to market it, that's a big thing. If people are really going to lean into it, the filmmakers, that's a really big deal. So we have a film coming up very soon that Disney really wanted to lean into, which is Planet of the Apes. And even though it wasn't filmed with IMAX cameras, I mean, you don't have to be a genius to say apes, big, right, IMAX, but you know, but the consumer will get that. And we use technology. Well, we haven't filmed it. We have proprietary algorithms that blow it up and make it look really good.
Oh, that's interesting. So it's not just larger screen and same movie.
No, the fake X's, right, take same movie and put it on bigger screen. Looks worse.
But Furiosa is going up against Apes. So how do you choose there?
I don't remember the exact dating. We're playing Furiosa for 2 weeks. I think Apes moved, so I think we had some play time to do that. But our technology basically fills in the missing data. So when you blow it up, if you just put it on a screen, it will look worse. But using our algorithms and it's called DMR technology. And by the way, we do that with the filmmaker. So we don't just sit there and say, oh, we'll do this. And we've developed a system where they can turn knobs and they could control what they want their IMAX version to look like. So it's a tailored IMAX product.
A lot of people think the biggest movie of the year is going to be Despicable Me 4, but they don't, those movies don't play huge in IMAX, right?
Well, it depends. Super Mario Brothers did really well in IMAX, and the Despicable Me movies do okay. But I personally think the biggest movie of the year is going to be One of Three. I think
it's, tell us.
It's I'm wrong half the time, like everybody else. But when I look out, I think it'll either be Deadpool, Despicable Me, or Joker, because I think we saw the trailer break. I think Joker has breakout potential.
Well, as you know, I am pulling for Deadpool because I picked it in our box office draft, and Lucas has Despicable Me 4. So if you can do anything there to rejigger the screens.
Well, they just need to shoot them with IMAX cameras and they'll have a bigger box office.
What have your recent conversations with Tom Cruise been like? Is he getting the IMAX screens next summer for Mission Impossible?
He is. Mission Impossible 8 is being filmed with IMAX cameras by Chris McQuarrie. They're going to do premieres in IMAX. Tom is going to lean in to the IMAX of it all. And, you know, he's a super professional person and maybe the ultimate professional. So after, and certainly it wasn't Tom's fault, but after there wasn't enough time to play both Oppenheimer and Mission at the same time, you know, Tom called up and said, I get it. I mean, it's not your fault. We kept our word. It wasn't about choosing one movie over another. It was just that Nolan's had picked that date and we're locked in to do that date.
I mean, it was a Paramount problem, right? If they wanted the screens, they should have moved the date.
Well, I don't know enough about the internal workings of why it got dated there, but someone should have moved the date. I don't know who it was.
And that's the nightmare scenario it feels like now for these studios, where you're leaving money on the table if you're not dating in a way that IMAX and, to a lesser extent, some of the other PLFs can promote your film and get the increased box office. Because we all know admissions are going down. So it's, where is the money coming from? And increasingly, it's the large format screens. So when the studios talk about their year in box office, shouldn't they be talking more about, yes, we have these IMAX screens locked up?
And they are. So we don't have an open week between May and September next year. And to your point, the studio's wanting IMAX. So 7 movies in a row that we're playing are filmed with IMAX cameras. So they get that point that if they film with the cameras, we're going to guarantee them the dates. So literally from May through the end of September, every one of them. And they include movies like Mission, which you just asked about. They include a number of Marvel movies. They include Superman. I'm very excited about the Formula One movie starring Brad Pitt that Apple's doing.
Yeah, although I've heard about some reshoots and some time down on that one. But at some point, it'll get to theater.
Well, Joe Kaczynski, who did Top Gun Maverick, and Jerry Bruckheimer are really behind it. And they really understand the importance of IMAX in making an already great movie look even better.
Some of the analysts have been a little perplexed that the IMAX stock price isn't higher. There's one, Eric Handler, who wrote this week that it's tracking like a traditional exhibitor rather than an asset-light technology platform. Why won't the market value you a little bit more than some of your exhibition partners?
Well, I'm pretty confident that in time they will, because in Hollywood, as you point out, everyone gets it. In Wall Street, I think it takes them a little longer. But remember, Wall Street thought streaming was the end of movies. And, you know, you and I could sit here for 10 hours and talk about how Wall Street's gotten it wrong. But I mean, ultimately, as I said, we're at 2019 levels. And we think this year, 24, is going to be a lot better than Wall Street thinks it is. And, you know, our first quarter, we beat street estimates by a lot. And I think because of the strike and because the first 2 months of the year, you know, didn't have a lot of good content, that people had a recency bias and they're like, oh my God, the year is going to be terrible. But you look at March, it was pretty good. And I think there's a lot of good things coming up, many of which we've talked about. But I also think for IMAX, it's the fact that our aperture is wider. So there's local language film, there's alternative content, there's documentaries. We have a documentary coming out in May about the Blue Angels, and it was shot by the same crew that did Top Gun Maverick. So the, so think about in a six-story high screen, planes flying 18 inches apart, and it has a story. So we just have a wider scope of content. So, you know, I just feel pretty good about the year.
And as we evolve here, it feels like the studios are putting so many of their eggs in smaller baskets. And you are the carrier of those baskets in many ways. If a lot of the stuff falls away, that don't movies that don't feel theatrical anymore, that go to streaming, that aren't, you know, putting they're not putting those in theaters, the larger exhibition industry struggles because of the lack of volume. You don't necessarily struggle. You struggle if there aren't tentpoles.
To some extent, that's true. But again, you have to broaden your feeling about tentpoles. So there are five foreign language films this weekend. So they're not tentpoles playing at the local cinema in Chicago, but they're tentpoles playing in Japan. And these tentpoles do a lot of money. So we just...
They don't do Dune money, though.
No, they don't do Dune money, but nothing does Dune money except for Dune or Oppenheimer. But I think the more our network continues to grow, and last year we signed about 130 new theaters, and most of them are in high per screen average territories like Japan, which does 2 million a year a screen, or Australia, which is a big market. So not only is our box office going to grow because of more content, but also a bigger footprint. So we have two ways to win.
I saw you're putting Dune back into IMAX in April. Is that because there's sort of relatively few big movies in April?
I'd say that's a factor. But I think one of the biggest factors is we've cut back the number of theaters showing Dune because we put Godzilla on the screen. And on half of the screens that we had, we're still doing over 20% of the box office. So it, like I was saying earlier, it's appointment viewing. People want to see it in IMAX, and they're saying, I'm not going to see it if it's not in an IMAX theater. So even the last couple weekends, which we're 6 weeks in, there have been very strong pre-sales and strong sales.
All right, so last question. We're here at CinemaCon, surrounded by people who own movie theaters. Other than... the gripe that they put an X on their large format screens. What annoys you about the exhibition industry that you would like to see fixed? I've said my gripe, over screening. There should be fewer screens. What's your gripe?
I'm focusing more on the consumer experience. I think the experience should start at the curb when people come out. And I think it should follow through in terms of maintenance, in terms of cell phones, in terms of seating. I think they just need to put as much effort into that.
Like foot massages? What are you talking about?
I'm talking about even for cinephiles, the experience. I think when you go to a movie, it's got to be, better than going to your home. And it's got to be communal. I think, it could be lines at concession stands. I think there needs to be a focus on the consumer experience. And there are some chains who do it really well, and there are other ones that, are just phoning it in. And I think it would really come back to them if they created a better consumer experience.
All right. Well, I appreciate the time. Thanks, Rich Gelfond.
Thanks, Matt. Good to see you.
We are back with the call sheet. Craig, you excited about Civil War this weekend?
I think so. I'm not sure. Remind me, did you go to the premiere? Have you seen it?
Actually, I did. Funny story. I went to the LA premiere. It premiered at South by Southwest, and we made fun of it because everyone said it was the greatest movie in the world. And lo and behold, critics are like, it's good, but not great. I went to the LA premiere, and A24 gave away my seat. I was on time for the record, and they said, I'm sorry, we gave away your seat. So I have not seen this movie.
Wow. So you were not high enough on the juice list.
Somebody,
a higher seed came and took your seat.
I was not. No, I mean, A24, don't even get me started. They're the way they treat media is not great, which you can do if you are, you know, the hot Brooklyn studio that's really a hedge fund backed, you know, profit making machine, but whatever. They can do whatever they want. I do not pretend to be entitled to a seat at their premiere, but they did invite me. I did show up, and then they told me that there were no seats available.
What a flex by them.
I know, a huge flex. A24 is definitely cooler than this podcast. Just remember, A24, it feels different on the way down than it does on the way up.
Okay, so...
So Civil I have War. Not seen this movie, but the tracking is $20 million, which is a lot for this kind of movie.
It would be the biggest A24 opening ever, I believe.
It would be. And this is sort of the start of their new era where they're releasing bigger budget movies. They're working with, you know, sort of bigger templates. I think I'm actually going to take the over on this. The IMAX and PLF advance reservations are very high, which suggests that it could overperform. You know, you'd think it would have entered the greater zeitgeist a little more. Like, Fox News hasn't been plugging this. Like, you think they might, a movie about, you know, the country ripping apart. But I just feel like it's the curiosity factor is going to get people out.
I think I'm going to lean under. I don't know why. I don't feel like the buzz is there for this movie. I don't think people are talking about it. And maybe actually, because you know what? I'm not going to see it this weekend. And you know why? I don't really want to go see a movie about America crumbling.
Well, that's the thing. It's like, you can see that on CNN if you want. I know that's the knock on a movie like this. It's like, do people want to spend their free time engaging with these issues when they are hitting us over the head every day in the news?
I wonder if this movie will do well internationally because of looky-loos wanting to kind of get insight into the American political system crumbling.
Yeah, you mean, well, and by looky-loos, you mean, you know, condescending people. Be like, look at these fucking Americans. Yeah, we'll see. It's an interesting one. I hope they did well with it. Maybe in the future, I will be able to see their movies and comment on them before we predict. But I was not able to see this one. And also, it's a really nice weekend in LA and a lot of different places. Maybe that'll impact people's willingness to go.
Okay, so you're officially taking the over on $20
million. Yeah, I may regret this, but I am going to take the over based on the reservations and the pre-sales. All right, that's the show for today. I want to thank my guest, Rich Gelfond. I want to thank producer Craig Horlbeck. By the way, Craig, you got a lot of love here at CinemaCon. People come up to me everywhere. Love the show, especially love Craig. More Craig always is what I get.
Oh, wow. The call sheet will soon be 25 minutes. So there you go.
Yes, exactly. We'll do all call sheet episodes. I want to thank you. So we will see you next week.
This episode is brought to you by State Farm. You might say all kinds of stuff when things go wrong, but these are the words you really need to remember. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. They've got options to fit your unique insurance needs, meaning you can talk to your agent to choose the coverage you need, have coverage options to protect the things you value most, file a claim right on the State Farm mobile app, and even reach a real person when you need to talk to someone. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.